Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Easton, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Excuse me. What I was trying to do there that I kind of came in a little late is I got this new microphone. Well, it's not new. We had it last year. We could never get it to work. So John Kelly, producer of the Hot Lava Podcast, and I trying to figure something out. And typical me, I was trying to do two things at once, which I scientifically proven I cannot do two things at once. So here we are. Hot Lava Podcast, beginning of spring training. Pitchers and catchers, as we tape this on, I believe, what is Tuesday afternoon, I've already lost track of days of the week. They report tomorrow, so that's Wednesday. But guys were out throwing today. There's even some position players there, as usual, early. Craig Stammen spoke. Steven Souza Jr. spoke. Randy Knorr, new bench coach, old friend of Craig Stammen, old mentor of Craig Stammen, he spoke. I talked to Jason Adam. I'll have a story on him tomorrow. Ryan, I'll let you talk now. Where would you like to start?
Well, let's see. What's changed since the last time you and I spoke? Let's see. The team's for sale, and there's a new manager, and two-fifths of their starting rotation is somewhere else. Another guy's back. We have a full season to dive into some of these deeper things, Kevin. For now, I'd like to start with Craig Stammen. He is the story, I think, here the first couple days of spring training. Stammen is a guy who you've known a long time. Kevin, but he's stepping into a role where so many others have struggled, manager of the San Diego Padres. How comfortable is he as he starts this new job? And then what have the last few days been like talking to him?
I think Craig is very comfortable. Craig is a guy who is utterly comfortable in his own skin. But of course, there's some nerves. There's some and that's not a bad thing. There's some anxiousness to learn, to prove, you know, to get going, but he's very comfortable with the Padres. I remember something he said to me in November, which is, you know, you can argue whether I was ready to be a manager. He does not believe, like he states unequivocally, you can't argue I was ready to be manager of the Padres, because there's a familiarity with the with AJ Preller, with the organization, with the players. And so it is a fascinating thing. I think he's the right guy for a team that is generally steeped in drama. I cannot tell you. It has been my experience covering him over the years. Like Craig Stammen, it's not that he doesn't believe in drama. He just doesn't acknowledge it. It doesn't exist or it exists. It's that he just won't give it any quarter. Like it just should not matter to your everyday life. Let's find a solution. Let's enjoy life. Let's enjoy baseball. Let's play our best. I think he's the right guy. He's somebody Manny Machado trusts and values, his wisdom. As I've said all along though, Ryan, and I think you would agree, like he could be my best friend and I could not possibly say whether he's going to be successful as a manager.
Sure. I know it's still early in Peoria, Kevin. Pitchers and catchers haven't even officially shown up yet. Any sign that just kind of the vibe's going to be similar or different between Craig Stammen and Mike Schilt?
It's a great question. I'd like you to ask it again next week and perhaps the week after, because it is so early. Yes. Like if you want to talk personally, the vibe is definitely different. With players, look, no one ever had an issue with Mike and the players. Like Mike valued the players. The players knew Mike valued them. If there was anybody Mike wasn't going to tick off, it was going to be the players at virtually all costs. That's not to say he never did, but like that's so. Will there be a different vibe for a lot of people? Yes, there will be. And like I said, I mean, Craig is just a different dude. I mean, I don't say this as a slight to Mike Schilt. I think a big part of what I'm paid to do is tell it like it is. And again, I'm not ripping Mike Schilt as much as this will unequivocally sound like I'm ripping him. Craig Stammen has more charisma in his pinky finger than Mike Schilt has.
Right. Right. No, it's true. It's true. And again, you look at a guy who can, there are so many people from so many different corners of that organization who love Craig Stammen. Baseball can be a siloed game, Kevin. If you're a relief pitcher, sometimes you only hang out with other relief pitchers. If you're an American-born player, sometimes it's easier to just hang out with other American-born players. It happens, right? There are silos. What about Craig Stammen has allowed him to be so embraced by sort of all these different corners of the organization.
That charisma, the intentionality to make it that way, right? Not that he was looking toward being a manager, but to him being a leader was knowing everybody. And I've written many times, I've talked many times about, you know, a middle reliever to have that big of a reach, to have that effect on position players. I mean, there's not too many, right? There's just not. And he did. And so he was, in a way, made for this job. He grew. He believes that you can learn leadership, and he did, though I believe, you know, you're also born with it, and he was. But there was a real intentionality to that, you know, big golfer, big card player. Depends on who you ask whether he's any good at cards. He believes he's the best. Old school, right? On the plane with Will Myers, Manny Machado, playing cards. And so, you know, golfing with different guys just was a big, huge relationship builder. And you know, you bring in, again, I talked to Steven Souza, the new hitting coach, and Randy Knorr, the new bench coach, came in, and they talk relationship. And that is huge to Craig Stammen. Now, one of my questions is, what does that have to do with winning? Even though I've seen it have, but like, you got to have the talent, you have to execute, and then the relationships can get you through the 162, 187 day grind. And it all works together. But I mean, paramount to Craig Stammen's approach to leadership is relationships.
And don't sell him short, Kevin. He wasn't just a middle reliever. He started a playoff game.
He did, and he started his career as a starter. But yeah, we'll probably, Jeff Sandor and I were talking about that, we'll probably revisit the Craig Stammen game. Yes, it was, what, was it 2 1/3 innings or 1 2/3 innings? But Craig Stammen took the mound that day thinking he was starting. Craig Stammen took the mound thinking he's going 4 or 5 innings, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and Jace Tingler didn't tell him. Like, and Craig was mad when he got pulled, and Jace was like, well, did you want me to tell you that you were only going to face this many batters? Craig's like, no. And I think one of the iconic pictures, I know it's one of two pictures hanging in Jace Tingler's study, is the picture of him leaping or having leapt into Craig Stammen's arms after that game.
Right. The opposing manager that day, you know this, Mike Schilt.
Yes.
Which I think is just super interesting. Kevin, we're going to have all season to unpack Craig Stammen and to talk about the culture and whatever changes may be coming sort of internally there with the Padres. But there's a larger thing that's sort of looming over at least the start of this season. And that is, how much money do they have to spend and how do they plan to spend it? You had a story that we posted a little bit earlier today. It essentially said, yes, the Padres are planning on signing another starting pitcher here in spring training. But there's a big caveat there, isn't there?
Yeah, don't be surprised if that's like a non-roster invite of a name pitcher, right? Like the kind that I know, Ryan, that as the lifelong Padres fan, and we don't need to, our longtime listeners will know about your relationship with journalism and growing up in San Diego and fan and journalist and objectivity, all that. But as basically the show's historian, you would probably think right away back to the old, like the marquee signing for the Padres in the offseason would be some has-been that, you know, they brought in for $5 million or something, because that was, you know, for whatever their lightning in a bottle approach was every year. But you know what? We're talking about a Walker Buehler, a Jose Quintana, somebody that is at $1 million or maybe 2 million, or is, you know, we get far enough into camp and they're a minor league deal with a, you know, with whatever, a salary if they make the majors and make, you know. And so, yeah, that's where they're at. That, have they been talking about every starter left on the market, including Framber Valdez, Zach Gallen, Chris Bassett? Yes. But as I wrote, Ryan, well, I shouldn't bring it up if I can't remember his name. Pitcher just signed for $6 million.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pitcher with the just signed with the Athletics for $6 million.
Yes. Yeah. So you really have to give me the name, and they, again, longtime listeners understand I have these brain farts. Go ahead.
Aaron Civale.
So Aaron Civale signed for $6 million for 1 year. Aaron Civale, if you want to be as generous as possible, you comp him to Zach Gallen. Padres don't have $6 million to give Zach Gallen. And Zach Gallen's going to get twice that, at least, with option years and, you know, all that. So this is a guy who turned down the qualifying offer, right? $22 million, right? And is looking for a multi-year deal. There's still time for him to get that. Only takes one team to give it to him. So for whatever reports there are, whatever I've talked to people and been told, yeah, the Padres are in on him. Okay, that's why Kevin... love to speak about myself in the third person because it's not obnoxious at all. That's why I don't get just too into the offseason, in on, talked about. I do an air quotes for those listening later. Okay, they're in on Zach Gallen. Maybe if Zach Gallen remains on the market for another 2 weeks and Scott Boras, his agent, and Zach Gallen and a lot of other people have completely misjudged what the eventual market for him will be, maybe then the Padres get creative enough and sign Zach Gallen to a real bargain deal. But that does not seem likely.
Well, and when you talk about the amount of money that they have to spend, I mean, you see the guys coming off the market for about that money. I mean, Kevin, what do you think is realistic here? $4 to $8 million, maybe?
No, that's beyond what probably they can do. Okay. Again, unless, and I'll give you an example. Let's say Framber Valdez, who ended up getting a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of guaranteed money and a whole bunch of upfront money from the Tigers. Let's say that he had, and that he was open to a Nick Pivetta type deal, right? Like $2 million the first year, 19 and a half the second, you know, a signing bonus of $2 million, whatever. Like, right, you're getting, you know, you're $22 million and then you're getting this option. And Valdez got more than that. But like me, the Padres would have bent themselves into a pretzel to sign Framber Valdez in some way, right? Get creative, trade someone. I don't know. Zach Gallen's not that guy. Right. No, Lucas Giolito's not that guy. Chris Bassett is not that guy. These guys that are left on the market are not guys the Padres are going to go above and beyond, because they have Matt Waldron, they have JP Sears, they have Randy Vasquez, they have Kyle Hart. Like, they are those names that are going to be at the top of the rotation? No, but like, they believe they have comparable to what's available on the market as once you factor in money. Okay. Right. So like, they're just not playing at that level. They remember they're also trying to get a scrap heap first baseman / DH. So, you know, there's only so much that they can do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you talk about what could $4 or $5 million get you. Well, today, the Colorado Rockies signed Tomoyuki Sugano, who, you might ask yourself, Kevin, he's kind of an innings eater guy. He has 1 year of big league experience, played his entire life in Japan until last year, pitched for the Orioles, was just a guy. Probably don't see a lot of people walking around in Tomoyuki Sugano jerseys. Probably just a guy. 1 year, $5.1 million. So these are the kinds of waters the Padres are swimming in. In a world where Aaron Civale gets six, Tomoyuki Sugano gets five.
There's the waters they're swimming in, but really they're not. I mean, they are. But then, like, once those guys sign, it shows you they're not, right? Right. Like, I think if it goes on long enough, Germán Márquez, there's a guy, right? Guy that what you're hoping is, it's he doesn't come in with the promise of a Michael Wacha, a Nick Pivetta, where Ruben Niebla, with these guys being trying to remake their career, those guys can be really good. Well, they're gonna get a 4 or 5 ERA, right? And they're gonna hope that guy can give them a 3 or 4 ERA. So we're not even talking about the Walkas, right? Who, like, that was a nice signing, but like, how confident were you Michael Wacha was going to have that kind of season for the Padres, right? Right. So, right. And we're not even talking about that. That's not what they're looking at now.
Right, right. But these are the kinds of names that sort of are in even the $5 million, $6 million a year category, and that's probably too rich for the Padres' blood. Márquez is interesting. You know, one thing that I think the Padres have done a little bit this offseason too is mostly through their minor league signings, they've signed a lot of guys who have plus stuff and control issues, right? I mean, it seems like that's maybe a little bit of a trend with them. You know, I wonder who among the available guys sort of fits that profile. If that's something they think they can fix. If you think Ruben Niebla can get a guy to throw more strikes or get a guy to tweak one pitch, maybe there's a good value play out there in a guy who's not 36 years old. You know, somebody who's not Jared Weaver, right? Somebody more of a, you know, disappointing younger pitcher who might be able to figure something out.
Yeah. Tweak a pitch, add a pitch. Absolutely. They're counting on Ruben Niebla and their pitching group, air quotes, to make the kind of difference. But it's not, they're not about limitations on the guy, but it's not going to be that guy. They paid Nick Pivetta. They paid Michael Wacha. So it's not going to be that guy. There's not a Lugo out there right now, as far as they see it.
Right. And you know, you look at somebody like a Marco Gonzalez, you know, they signed him, gave him a guaranteed, what is it, 1 million, possibility of another million or something like that. Mm-hmm. With that deal. I mean, maybe that's, you know, maybe that's a hint as to the kinds of guys that might be coming too. You know, Marco Gonzalez, not necessarily old, but a major league veteran and a guy who's been pretty good, right? Not great.
Yep. That's depth for him. That's a, you know, it'd be somewhat shocking. Again, Padres are quote unquote believing or hoping, as they every spring, that every guy in camp can make the major league roster. Okay. And boy, it's going to be so tough to make that cut down to 26 and those 13 pitchers. But I mean, it would be a surprise to most people if Marco Gonzalez is not in AAA at the start of the year, right? I'm not sure. I haven't checked out his deal, what kind of opt outs he has. He has a great, you know, spring. He's probably on the roster. I'm just saying, like, no. Remember, Matt Waldron doesn't have any options left. Okay. J.P. Sears does, Kyle Hart does, but like it'll be interesting depending on how these guys pitch. Matt Walters does the pitch his way onto the team, but I believe he has that over the other guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like if all things being equal, Matt Waldron's your, you know, fifth starter.
Right. I wouldn't sleep on J.P. Sears. This is a guy who is a league average, if not a little bit better, major league starter. He was not good when he got here last summer. Was not really a part of what they were trying to do down the stretch. But, you know, you never know. I think that his resume is pretty good. I think would put him in the conversation for maybe a back-end rotation spot.
Hey, if that's a guy who, if they acquired him this offseason, let's say he'd gone about pitching for the Athletics the rest of the year, and they acquired him this offseason, we would be talking about him as, oh, yeah, he slotted in to be their number five starter. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
No, you're 1,000% correct. And again, this is, you know, I feel like we bring this up every year, Kevin, but it's worth bearing out, you know, at least since I've been here, there's been a little bit of this conversation at the start of spring training every year for the Padres. 2 years ago, Kevin, in 2024, they entered spring training with one outfielder. His name was Fernando Tatis Jr., right? And then they went and they signed Jerickson Profar and they told Jackson Merrill to get a bigger glove and go play center. And they figured it out, right? They entered last season with Jason Hayward in left field and with Yuli Gurriel at DH. And you know what? They figured it out.
Gavin Sheets.
Right. And yes, Gavin Sheets, a flyer on Gavin Sheets, right? They take a flyer on Gavin Sheets and he works out. I'm not saying this is the way fans would necessarily run a ball club by any stretch. But to act like this is different than any of the past years is to be sort of willfully ignorant. This is kind of what AJ Preller's done lately. This is the way he builds a team. He's trying to get good value on whoever is left when spring training begins.
It's a dangerous way to live. You're correct. Gurriel and Hayward didn't work out. Sheets did. Profar worked out like, I mean, wow. You know, from blue guy to all-star, that's a pretty big jump. But yes, absolutely. It's like, why are we up in arms? Now, like I said, it's a dangerous way to live. And one of these times, right? You're going to get bit by it because whatever, you didn't find your Gavin Sheets. And I don't want to overstate what Gavin Sheets was last year, but you know what? They don't win 90 games without him. So that was, you know, there were times where he was carrying them. That's what we'll see. I don't know who that candidate is this year. And you know what? Guess what? A lot of times there's not that candidate. They don't need They didn't have a left, as you pointed out, they didn't have a left fielder. Jurickson was going to start the season left field. He was given that job. They just didn't know if it was going to last a month, month and a half. And it turns out he went as an all-star and pretty much lasted the whole season, at, you know, playing at a really high level. They don't have that needs. Remember, like, not only did they pick up these guys, Mason Miller, Ramon Laureano, J.P. Sears, Freddie Fermin, at the trade deadline last year, and like that was big for them for 2025 and trying to win the World Series. That did a portion of their offseason work for them, right?
Well, and you talk about
a left fielder and a catcher. Oh, and not to mention a closer. Like they and pitching and starting pitching depth. They got that at the trade deadline. Those are controllable dudes. Like Laureano's the only one not controllable even beyond this year. Yeah, I think, I don't think Sears is in the final, but I know for sure Mason Miller and Freddie Fermin, multiple years to go. So, like, remember that. Like, there's no, there wasn't as much work to do. Now, look, I'm cautious about their depth, as we have been before, and probably even more cautious about it this year. Miguel Andujar, in terms of depth and in terms of platoon advantages that he could provide, that was a big signing. Let's not overstate it, but that was a big signing. And you could tell how much they think it was a big signing. We just spend a lot of time talking about how much $4 million is to them. They gave Miguel Andujar $4 million. He's going to play a bit. But their roster is not, I mean, it's in better shape or more definite now than it has been, well, since 2023. And look how that worked out.
Yeah. No, you make a good point. And being, again, having a starting left fielder, having a catcher who you feel pretty good about playing most of the time, those are two things that the Padres did not have at this point in each of the last two seasons. They just didn't. I'll save my panic for when I see the opening day roster and see who's on there. And even that comes with a caveat that says, you know, if you can name 20 of the 26 guys from last year's opening day roster, I'll buy you a beer, right? There are a lot of dudes that started the season against the Braves that were not heard from after July 1st, right? Yeah. We just named two of them in Hayward and Gurriel.
The amount of angst over opening day roster, and I'm thinking back to last year, the two guys you're talking about, Gurriel and Hayward being on there is, you know, look, every fan base every year, and a lot of times the media overreacts to that opening day roster. And I've already said, hey, it's a dangerous game, right? Like, you know, even I was downplaying it last year. Like, look, I think I predicted that Gurriel had until April 1st. I think that's about when he was gone. The only guy who outlasted what their prediction was Martin Maldonado.
Yeah.
Right? He was gone at the trade deadline and then was back on the roster for the playoffs. But like, they knew going in, I wrote it, everybody knew it, and a lot of people ignored it. Hayward and Gurriel were not going to last the season. And if they did, they shocked the hell out of the Padres and everybody else. Opening day is just opening day.
Right. And as you have brought up to me, Kevin, year after year, a lot of my questions and a lot of my sort of stresses come from thinking about the last five guys on the roster. And at the end of the day, it's the first five guys on the roster. We're ranking them in order from good to not good. It's your top five guys on the roster that are the ones you should worry about. And who your backup catcher is and who your fifth outfielder is matters, but not nearly as much as Fernando Tatis hitting home runs, Manny Machado being able to go to the post and fighting off Father Time a little bit, Xander Bogaerts playing well when he's healthy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. I can't even think of the left fielder who I asked you about on every episode for about 2 years. Eggie Rosario. Remember Eggie Rosario? How much time did we spend?
I love talking you calling about him a left fielder. But yes, because he was for a little bit in a fantasy world. Yes. Yes.
Right. Right. Yes. We talked a lot about Eggie Rosario and Luis Camposano on this show over the years, Kevin. And in reality, it's more about can your superstars play like superstars?
Absolutely. And neither one of us would underestimate the value of the role player, the Solano, one of my all-time favorites. As I As I prove again that I have a brain fart, just retired David Peralta. Skipped my brain for a second. We are not going. Gavin Sheets last year, who was more than a role player, but was a role player. Heck, I could argue that Jose Iglesias was extremely important last year for the defense he played and the kind of productive outs that he made. I'm not trying to diminish their importance, but I mean, scream it from the mountaintops, Ryan Finley. The Padres go as their stars go. That's true for most teams. It's really true for the Padres. Already today, people I talk to in the organization, going back to the same old thing that they say every spring. Well, we'll see how our big guys do.
Yep, exactly. Exactly, Kevin.
And that's a compliment to those big guys as much as it is, well, more so than it is what we all are thinking too, which is how, you know, one, two, or all of them have been a little disappointing, you know, most of these last, let's call it 3 years, right? And the fact is, though, they're so freaking good or have the potential or have been so good that you think if they could put it together, wow, this is a team that could be special.
If they have a big four, and let's say that big four is Tatis, Machado, Bogarts, and Merrill, if three of those big four can ever play well at the same time, and I'm not sure that that's happened yet. If all four are healthy and three of them have good seasons, Padres go to the playoffs. They do.
Oh, go to the playoffs. And during that stretch that those four, provided the pitching is adequate, the bullpen's what we think it's going to be, the starting pitching is decent. Like, you know, let's say it's 25 games that those four are they 20-5 in that span? I mean, like, right. I mean, is it 6 runs a game? I mean, I don't know what kind of level you're talking about, but I think you're correct that we haven't seen it, not what we're looking for, where for an extended period of time, three of the big four, go back to what you thought the big four was in 2023, what you thought the big four was in 24, what you thought, I don't think we've seen it at the same time. As a matter of fact, more often than not, it's been monumentally disappointing. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible team. Now, this is a little bit pie in the sky, what you and I are talking about here, because that doesn't happen for anybody but the Dodgers. It didn't even happen for the Dodgers last year. They're big four.
That's right. That's right. That's right. They were a catch at the wall away from being the biggest disappointment in the history of baseball, right? It's crazy. Kevin, we're coming up on our time here a little bit, but I do want to put you on the spot because I do this all the time. And in a new season, man, I've got a notebook full of questions for you. When is this AJ Preller extension coming? We've heard that this has been coming for a while. Is there any reason to be concerned if you're a person who likes AJ Preller and wants to see him around?
Concerned. Not yet. So I'm adding yet to the conversation. Look, AJ Preller knows his value. AJ Preller knows that he would have a job tomorrow, let's say. I'm hyperbolizing, but like, you know, if they ran this contract out, AJ Preller will be a GM of a team next year if he wants to be, and he will want to be, I'm certain. And when I say he knows his value, like AJ Preller, who is single, doesn't have kids, and lives baseball, has more money than he will ever spend already. All right. But he don't want to break the bank. But, you know, AJ knows his value. And he knows that value is real, not just like that he believes in it. Like, we're talking a year ago about, ooh, if they don't make the playoffs, is AJ gone? AJ Preller is incredibly well thought of around this league. And so there's that. There could be a new owner. There could be a new owner who has far more money than the current ownership group and is going to commit to spend it. Maybe AJ wants to see what sort of reality that is. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, and I'm not putting this all in AJ's court, because the fact is, if the Padres wanted to get this deal done, it would get done. So you can't, everything I said, I know, makes it sound like, oh, is AJ slowing this up? And AJ is almost, kind of said that a little bit, that he's the one based on he focuses on the offseason. He's, you know, and I know this, and anyone who works with him knows this. He is in it, man. And so, but like, I'm not putting in AJ's court, because let's say all these things were true. Like that he, and he was demanding some sort of money or something. Let's, you know, make something up. Well, Padres could pay it. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, it goes both ways. I do know this. It has been more difficult to get done than the Padres thought it would be. How about that?
Gotcha. That makes total sense. Kevin, where are you going for dinner tonight?
I got some salmon in the fridge, and you know, we're starting early again tomorrow. So, you know, got to work out before, you got to work out before, cause you never know what's going to happen throughout the day. I'm getting old, so I'll be in bed early. That's what I'm doing tonight.
All right. I expect a chain restaurant review for next time we talk, Kevin. Give me cause Peoria.
I went to North Italia for lunch. Love North Italia. I mean, so you can get those in almost any city, right?
Yep.
There's even a couple in San Diego.
Fashion Valley.
Fashion Valley. Love North Italia. Chicken salad or the meatballs. But go easy on the cheese, because that cheese is full of carbs and calories. That little whatever they got. But man, love it. So big chain guy for the convenience. And because if you're in Peoria, you basically have no choice.
That's true. That's very true. That's very true. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Ainsley, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.